It's Song Talk Radio.
Welcome to Song Talk Radio, the show of songwriters talking to other songwriters about the craft of songwriting. We share tips, tools, and techniques, and together we all become better at writing songs. Dialing in from our headquarters in Toronto, I'm Neil Modi, and with me, my co-host, Phil Emery. How you doing, Phil?
Calling in from St. John's, Newfoundland. I'm doing pretty good, even though we had insane winds, but nothing blew off the house. So, but pretty good.
That's good to know, yes.
And getting excited for Christmas time, because it's almost a month to Christmas, believe it or not.
It is almost time, yeah. It's creeping up very, very quickly.
Before you know it, it'll be tomorrow.
Yeah, in a few hours, in fact. But the weather's cooperating with that, so there's always that. Okay. For everyone else, please send your comments and questions to at Song Talk Radio on Facebook or Instagram, feedback@songtalk.ca for the email, and we'll share your thoughts on the show. And please visit songtalk.ca to see the show post for this episode, to find links to resources we mention, and to download lyric and chord sheets to follow along with the songs that we feature. Tonight, just in the family, we're happy to be continuing the episodes for our songwriting challenge for 2025, which is to write a song in an odd time signature. And tonight, we're just going to be taking a listen to Phil's answer to the challenge. But before we get to that, in case you guys haven't heard, the number one song, and even number one is kind of like which chart?
Well, that's true too.
so the number one country song on the digital charts or streaming charts or whatever, it's going a little bit viral right now because it is an AI generated song. So that's the number one country song this week is an AI generated song. So the end is nigh.
That's it.
We're done.
I actually haven't listened to it.
Right.
Neil, have you listened to it?
I watched the Rick Beato video where he's you know, old man yelling at clouds about this. And and he's not that much older than me.
No.
But he did play a little bit of it. And to be honest, I did start to wonder, you know, if Rick Beato hadn't heard that this song was AI, what would he think of it? Because it did sound pretty convincing to me. Mm. You know, he joked about how the singer must have smoked, you know, a pack a day of digital cigarettes to get that raspy voice kind of thing. But, you know, and of course he criticized the overly simplistic, you know, inane lyric. But it's like, you know, humans, right? Overly simplistic inane lyrics too.
That's true. I mean, you know, I have never had my head checked by a jumbo jet.
yeah.
Nor have I ever found a champagne supernova in the sky. So
yes, well, it's because you're looking down.
You know, it's not good that it's number one. I should listen to it. I'm not sure if that is an indictment of AI, or if that is an indictment to perhaps somewhat formulaic music that has come out in the last 10 years as music is, as labels have been bought out by multinationals and huge corporations. So I don't know. Quincy Jones said the worst part about the music industry is that the people in charge don't really know what a C note is. They hear a C note, right. They think it's, you know, $500.
Yeah.
So yeah. I think that might be true, I should listen to it. Hopefully not everything will be AI on the charts.
Right.
Maybe we have to start looking at what charts actually mean.
Yeah, and then Rick Beato does raise that question as well. It's like, what, you know, it's not on the Billboard charts, which are traditionally was the only chart pretty much, but every, you know, local radio station has their own chart, and, you know, CBC has its own charts, and everybody has their own charts. So who knows? Spotify has its own top 10, this, that, and the other. Like, everyone's got their own thing. So what does that even mean? But the biggest takeaway, especially Rick Beato even talks about this as well, is about proper labeling, right? Like, how do we hold the distributors and the playback systems, Spotify, et cetera, accountable and say, you know, maybe there is a chart for AI songs. You know, and maybe they're, you know, every song that's AI should be labeled, you know, number one AI artist. kind of thing, right? And just make it clear.
That would be fair. Yeah.
Yeah. Because it's like people have a right to know what they're listening to, right? And then they can make their own decision whether they like it or don't like it, or don't like it because of that or whatever. Like,
yeah, I mean, I'm not sure how many people would pay attention to it, but I think it should be. There's no reason to not label it. You know, there's no harm that could come from labeling it, so it should be labeled.
Yeah, fair enough. And maybe it's a question too of the like at the bottom line, this was okay. Sure, it was created by a robot, but the prompt was not created by a robot. Some person went and did a prompt in some kind of an AI system, sooner or otherwise, and then they would have to distribute it via DistroKid or ZD Baby or whatever, right? You know what I mean? So humans did intervene in this. So it's incumbent upon the quote unquote creators, if you want to call them that, creators, that when they upload this stuff, they should be disclosing that it's AI. When you upload a video to YouTube now, it does ask you, is there any altered content in this video, right? And what YouTube does with that, I don't know, because everything I upload to YouTube obviously is not altered. But yeah, hopefully as things evolve and progress, there will be more sort of transparency about these sorts of things. Because I do begin to, because it's hard now to divorce yourself from hearing the song and not knowing whether it's an AI song or not.
Yeah, well, then that's the whole thing about, you know, pitch correction is, you know, when you hear some of the songs back from the 70s and you hear the isolated vocals, some of them are amazing. However, they were also able to form 6 nights a week, 3 hours for 3 years before they got into the studio as a touring musician. And you can't really do that anymore. So, however, I think it would be really cool if radio stations would publish their playlists from way back when. I would love to, because I always listen to the music. I always listen to the radio as a kid. And, like it was on all the time, and I'd love to sort of hear those songs again, but I can't really remember what they are. And I think it'd be a great way of getting a label's old catalog moving as well.
Yeah. You never know. That's an interesting idea. I'm sure you should let them know that.
Like the old CFTR. We used to listen to CFTR because it was cooler than Chum at the time. Right. And then, Chum FM. And then, you know, CFNY. They had really interesting playlists back then because they did a lot of local stuff.
Do we know for sure that they've got that data saved somewhere, or is it just, was it just?
I think it was all handwritten. Most of those things were handwritten.
Oh, so they'd have to have boxes of these things somewhere.
And they probably aren't kept. So, you know, maybe there is somewhere, but they're not digitized.
Or have they ever been digitized? Like,
probably not. No.
To do that. I don't know.
I would just love to hear some of that old stuff, because sometimes I'll think about something. Oh, what was that song?
And of course you can easily go onto Spotify right now and or Apple Music or whatever and search, like, give me a '70s radio playlist, and it'll give you something.
Yeah.
How genuine it is, I don't know.
I have done it, and there was a lot of songs that I didn't recognize. So
right. I mean, on a kind of a side note, like we recently recovered our old my old DVD collection.
Oh, cool!
It was in storage. We weren't sure where it was in storage, whether it was in our storage bin or in my mom's place, in the basement or something. But I recently recovered it, and I'm going flipping through these. Everything's in binders, like discs are in binders. And I'm flipping through these things and go, there's so much of this stuff that is not on streaming.
It's
not on Netflix, it's not on Apple, it's not, like, there's so many, you know, these old indie movies from the 90s and stuff like that that I have on disc and nowhere to be found on streaming.
And you own them, and you can watch them anytime you want.
And I
own them,
and I can watch them anytime I want.
Yeah, something to be said about that.
Yeah, so anyway. All right, okay, so your songwriting challenge, Phil.
Yes.
You want to talk about how you started it and how it evolved for you?
Yes. So who was the horrible, horrible person who came up with this challenge? what a terrible and evil thing to do.
Evil Emery. That's who it was.
Yes, that was me. So I knew this was going to be a challenge, and it was. So I've written lots of songs, but I've never really written anything, you know, even in anything other than 4/4. I think I may have done a couple of things in 3/4, but I've never done anything in, like, 6'8" or any of those kinds of things.
You've never done a 6'8" song? You must have done a 6'8" song.
I think so.
Really? Okay.
Not as far as I know.
Yeah.
But I've never actually done a lot of stuff knowingly in odd time signatures.
Mm-hmm.
So I knew it was going to be a challenge, and it was a challenge on a whole bunch of levels that I didn't expect.
What did you expect?
Well, I knew it was going to be hard, but I had no idea how, all the things I would sort of run into, because I just never experienced it. But it was a great learning experience for me. It was a great thing that we did when we did that show, Odd Time Signatures. It really did help me a lot in terms of understanding how they work. And because of that, I chose that most of my song would be in 7/8.
Mm-hmm.
Sorry, 7/4. Because I could understand that. It's a bar of 4/4 and a bar of 3/4, or a bar of 3/4 and a bar of 4/4. So I could understand that division pretty easily, I think.
Right.
So the next thing I did is, because I tried counting off 7/4 in my head and playing, and that didn't really work very well. So I got out my DAW of choice, which is Cubase, and I did a loop of 4/4. And a loop of 3/4. I actually set up the project to be in 7/4. So I've used the time signature track, which I had never used before. So I started off in 7/4. So I made a bar. And the first four beats of that were just like a normal 4/4 drum beat. And then I added a 3/4 drum beat after that. And I played with that for a while. And I just listened to the drums on that. And it was very simple, hi-hat, bass drum, and snare. I listened to that for a while, and I thought, okay. And I started trying to play chords on top of that drum beat. And that was a real challenge, because when I was playing, I was always late on the one.
Yeah.
You know, because it sort of jumps to the one sort of unusually. And sort of I would do it, but it was always kind of rushed, and it never felt kind of natural. So the only way I could figure out to do that is actually playing just simple chords on the one of the bar of 4/4 and the one of the bar of 3/4. So each bar would have two chords, basically both hitting on the one of the sort of my division of 7/4. And that worked pretty well. And I listened to that for a while. And then it started to sound actually quite natural. And I'm just going, hold it. Have I done something wrong? Have I sort of slipped into 4/4? But I was playing with them, and I got the chords, and I kind of liked it. And they're sort of kind of extended chords. You know, it's one of those things I sit at the piano and just kind of hit notes and, you know, figure out what it is afterwards. So I had these chords, and I didn't love them. The way I write music is I come up with a riff or chord changes, and that will spark a melody in me, and then the song will grow from that. That's why I've not had a lot of great success going from lyrics first, because lyrics tend to not sort of ignite anything. So as I had this a bunch of bars of 7/4 and with the chords, and it sounded good, but it kind of didn't really do much for me. But I knew sort of the structure, you know, that I was going to have a hook, so I came up with a hook. But then my next challenge was I couldn't play the hook in 7/4 time. I had to make the hook in 4/4 time. So my hook is in 4/4 time, and my verse is in 7/4 time.
So what do you mean by hook? Which part of the song is the hook?
Well, so I like sort of doing a little kind of riff or a musical sort of motif at the beginning and at the end, and sort of or in the middle of the section.
Yeah, yeah.
To sort of separate things.
Right.
And I think it's what starts off the song when you hear it. So that was a challenge, because then I had to sort of figure out a way of getting into adding a time signature event of 4/4 before my project started. And then I realized, if you are going to do something like this in your DAW, you want to start on bar 8. So don't start on bar 1, because then you have to add time beforehand, and that can make everything go really screwy.
Right.
So that was a real challenge. So I had my hook in 4/4, my verse in 7/4, which was just chords, and I'm just kind of going, oh, okay. And then I was thinking of what to do for the chorus, and I thought, well, I'll do 7/8, because it seems kind of related. And I thought, well, maybe it'll sound more energetic. So I did some research on YouTube and sort of, I always try to listen to see what other people do with those kinds of things. And I couldn't find any songs in 7/8.
Really?
Now there's bits of riffs from Led Zeppelin in 7/8, but no one actually wrote a song in 7/8. That was a bit of a challenge. I did find one trumpet player, and we'll add that on YouTube, and we'll add that link on to the show notes. And he was playing actually to 7/8, and it was actually kind of like a Turkish kind of East Asian kind of groove to it. Which I sort of thought, oh, that's kind of cool. But I what basically someone said, well, this was a drum beat in 7/8, and it actually sounded like halftime to the 7/4, which was kind of weird. And I went, okay. So I kind of played some chords that on there, and again, having trouble with the timing. So I was just doing one chord per bar on that. And I tried a bunch of different chords and sort of nothing really caught. And this was like this week, like Monday. It was still sort of this kind of thing, and it just nothing was kind of coming together. Like I didn't, like, there's no melody in my head, and I wasn't sort of excited. So I did some more snooping on the internet and looking for drum loops in 7/8. And I just, you know, found a bunch and I dragged one into my project, and it was very different from my drum beat. It was almost kind of like almost like a double or a quadruple time for some reason. It's almost sounds kind of like a drum and bass kind of approach to rhythms. If you know about electronica, drum and bass, it's very often at 160 or 180, and it's you'll have long notes, you'll have doom. And on top of that, you'll have super fast drum breaks. And I've always quite liked that. I always thought that was kind of cool. And suddenly, the song caught fire for me. I came up with a melody for the chorus, and that gave me a melody for the verse. And suddenly, this thing actually finally caught fire. And the only thing I changed was that drum loop in the chorus.
Wow.
Yeah, so it's really weird. So the song starts in 4/4, goes into 7/4, and then the chorus is in 7/8.
Right.
Then the hook goes back into 4/4, and then it repeats. Wow. It's really just two verses and two choruses at this point.
Okay.
But it was so interesting for me that this thing that was just refusing to kind of catch fire, and I had been working on this actually for quite a while. I mean, it's not something I've just left until the last week. Basically started once we started about it, because I knew this was going to be a big challenge for me. I had to learn a whole bunch of new aspects of my DAW, which is a good thing. I found out that if your tracks, like I used a chord track and then I used a time signature track, and if they're not set in the proper kind of format, that if you change the tempo, everything goes screwy.
Oh boy.
and then trying to put stuff before, like adding the 4/4 in front of that and then getting a count in because it starts off with the bass was sort of a challenge. Lyrics are pretty throwaway. I just kind of came up with the way I do it is I come up with my melody and I kind of sing a bunch of nonsense words, and I kind of got some words that kind of make sense, and then I put them together, but they're not really sort of deep, meaningful lyrics.
Okay.
This is my my marathon. My goal wasn't to break a world record. My goal was to finish.
Right.
And I think I finished something. So.
Right. Fair enough. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, do you want to take a listen to it?
Yeah, let's take a listen to it. I would take a listen to it, and then I might get you to play it again, and maybe you could count the time over top of it.
Okay.
Because with all the set, because especially to illustrate the difference between the 7/4 and the 7/8, that's kind of an interesting change in the way that it works.
Yes. Now the 7/4 should be pretty easy because it'll sound like a 4/4, but then there's two hand claps.
Yes. Yes.
2 and 3, which I realized I actually stole from Dave Brubeck, but he actually said it was okay. So
I'm sure he's fine with it. I don't think you can copyright a hand clap.
Yeah.
Maybe two. You can maybe copyright two, but you can't.
Well, that's true. Okay. Yeah. Well, that's a lot worse. Figure it out. Okay, here we go.
Oh,
Wow. That is so cool. That's pretty funky. Yeah.
Yeah. So I'm glad that it sounded, I got it to sound sort of somewhat kind of rocky. That's what I wanted to do. But
yeah, for sure. Yeah. And so, it just sounds somewhat cohesive. Like the parts are fitting together quite nice.
Yeah.
You're right. The verse is quite easy to follow. Boom, check, boom, check, boom, check, check, boom, check, boom, check, boom, check, check, right? When you hit the chorus, I admit I do kind of, because your 7-4 verse is actually pretty up tempo.
Yeah.
Right? Like it's like over 120, I think. Like it's pretty like 120
or something. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Right. And then to go to a 7-8, then you're like, if it's 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 in the four, then you're looking at 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7. Yeah. Like it's really, really fast when you go to the 7-8.
Which is what I thought was going to happen. But when I first did my first beat, which I did do, like, you know, one bar, it sounded halftime.
Mm-hmm.
So it was just this weird kind of change. But yeah, it is twice as fast because you're actually counting in eights.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Which does give that chorus this kind of really wicked, like driving, you know, there's even like a double kick thing happening in there and everything. Like it's pretty wild. But I think your melody in the chorus is still kind of on a quarter note ish thing, right? So you're not spitting out like the super fast melody.
Well, Billy said, I don't think I could actually do that.
Yeah, that would be hard at that tempo. That would be like voicing. That would be pretty tough. You'd be rapping at that point.
Well, yeah, and I figured out that my vocal style is very kind of Brian Ferry-ish. I'm very sort of behind the beat. And I am trying to work on that, actually.
Oh, okay.
But it does make things, like, never quite as fast as I want it to be.
Mm.
Because I'm always just kind of a bit loungy. Mm-hmm. But I was so focused on just trying to get this thing to work. Mm. When I write stuff and I sing in my head, it's often one or two tones too low.
Oh, okay.
So if I'm thinking I might sort of do this again and then raise it up two tones because it is just a little bit low for me.
Right.
Just to try to get that.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. That seems a little low, but yeah.
But okay. Like these are scratch vocals. I basically threw those down this afternoon.
Okay.
Yeah, because it was, this really just kind of caught fire for me yesterday. And it was just the chorus change, the drums changed.
Yeah, and then that's an interesting approach because like you say, like you, if you had to glue together, it sounded like you, for your verse, you glued together a 3-4 loop, like a 4-4 loop and then a 3-4 loop, right? And then when you try that for a 7-8 thing, it's going to be kind, I imagine that would be fairly tricky to find a loop that would actually fit. But you also do have to find a loop that's actually 7-8, not a 4-4 and a 3-4 glued together, but, or like a 4-8 and a 3-8. 4-8 is kind of weird, but 4-8 and a 3-8 glued together, it wouldn't work. Yeah,
no, it wouldn't work.
You'd have to find something. And the beat you found, like your chorus beat, is kind of like it's a little more erratic. It's a little more, but it does sort of talk in the 7 as a whole, as opposed to the verse beat. The verse beat is very much 1-2-3-4, 1-2-3. It's clear, right? But your 7-8 beat does sound like a 7-8 beat.
Yeah, and it's kind of nice, actually, because I think it does help with contrast. And we always talk about the importance of having the sections of your songs being clearly delineated. And I think the 7-8, because it is so frantic versus the very straightforward, you know, 4-4 with the 3-4 at the end, it does kind of help separate them that much more, even though it's just chords changing on the one of each bar. So it's not like I was trying to do riffs on top of that as well. I'm sure some people could do it, but it was just
And
I don't have that skill to be able to play.
No, and as a starting point, I think that's fine, right? Like you can do it on the beat. I was working on a song earlier this week as well, and I found that everything was just, it was a 4-4 song, but it's just like just on the ones, and it just seemed to fit. I don't know. It just wasn't there wasn't a lot of room for syncopation in this thing anyway. So
yeah,
you know, you kind of. You kind of almost, I'm finding that lately too, is that whenever I write a song, there's that rhythmic dimension of, am I going to be playing with offbeats and 16th notes and things like that? Or am I going to keep everything kind of on the quarters and on the whole notes? right? And then I follow through with that for the whole song. And it's like, I'm speaking that language for the whole song. And as well, harmonically, am I just doing majors and minors, or am I doing, you know, extended chords, sevenths and nines and things like that. And I'll keep that, you know, consistent for pretty much the duration of the song, even if some of it is flips the other way or whatever, you know. But I've been finding that more lately, last couple of years, that every song I write kind of has that kind of consistency of the feel of the language it's speaking, right? So I think that's perfectly fine for a first stab at this, especially with the rhythmic challenges of this challenge. Obviously, it is a rhythmic challenge. You know, just staying on the ones is probably a good way to sort of address it at first.
You know, if I had played a lot of jazz, I think it might be a bit different, because, you know, a lot of jazz music is playing in more unusual, you know, time signatures, at least 5/4 or something. Something I realized, though, is my melody doesn't start until the first 3/4 bar. It was boom, boom, da, 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 da.
Oh, yeah, yeah, okay. Da, da. Yeah, it's kind of a pickup into the next bar almost.
Yeah, which is kind of weird, because you have the sort of the hook intro, and then you have, very often you'd have like a hook, and then you'd have maybe a couple of bars of vamping. But what I did is, it was completely organic. I did the melody, but when I was looking at the melody, I'm just going, oh yeah, it doesn't actually start basically
until the 3/4 part. So be beat 4 of the 7, really.
Five, six, seven, one.
Yeah.
But I think that also makes the melody kind of sit on top of the loops a bit different as well.
Yeah, for sure. For sure.
But then, of course, I did use the AB structure of the melody, that do, 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 do. Do, 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 do.
Yeah, yeah, which is a great way to do it, right? Like, call and response to a certain extent. Yeah, very cool, very cool. So yeah, so if you get to rewriting the lyric and putting a more meaningful thing in there, and you don't have a bridge, which is perfectly fine too. Like, it's kind of a short song. In fact, it's like very quick and dirty.
Well, this is really just sort of a demo.
Yeah, it's a sketch.
Because I was basically trying to get some. I was trying to get anything, really, was my goal. But I think I will kind of play around with it and, you know, raise it up a couple of tones and, you know, see what I could do for a bridge. But of course, you know, I don't think I'd put it in yet another time signature. I'd probably stick to 7/4 just to kind of keep it normal.
Yeah, yeah. But you could even for a bridge, you could do like sort of a halftime thing, like really draw out half notes and quarter notes kind of thing, like make the melody really legato and kind of.
Yeah.
Do something like that.
Yeah. So lots of stuff I could do. It was a great challenge. I mean, it was a tough one. And I think I struggled more with this challenge than any of the others.
Yeah.
Just because it was really so far out of my comfort zone.
Yeah. Yeah. It's a good one. I'm glad you managed to pull something off. And this whole idea you're talking about it sort of lit the fire for you, right? Like is that literally like setting the bar at a certain height and going, it has to satisfy me in a certain way before I consider it, even if it is just a sketch, like you're just trying to throw anything down, but even the anything has to be of a certain standard, right?
I could have put anything down, I suppose, but I just, because in my professional life, I have to generate, you know, campaigns and ideas. And let's be honest with you, there's times when there's nothing there. You know, my brain is empty and I just got nothing and I still got to generate. And I generate stuff that's effective, but I don't love it. And I think maybe with music, I kind of don't want to have to do that. That's the one part of my life where I don't have to say, well, I don't have any more time and I have to deliver something. This is what it's going to be. Yeah, it's because it's so much fun. I enjoy it so much once that fire is hit that that's really important. Whereas it would be hard for me just to phone something in, especially for lyrics, is so much not my wheelhouse that even to get something nonsense, it needs to be somewhat interesting. So, well, and also that's just the way I work, because I work from music first. And I think with lyrics first, you can sort of, there's a different process. And I think you can kind of find that fire in sort of almost a scholarly kind of way. Whereas this is just sort of like, hey, it jams and it happens and it's fun or it doesn't, you know?
Yeah, it's an interesting idea too. That yeah, you. But I suppose everyone's kind of the same. Like you want something to really hook you in.
Yeah.
Right. And then that in turn hopefully hooks the listener in. Right. Because if it hooks you, then it's gonna hook somebody else. Right. And yeah, you gotta have that sort of thing that really draws you. I do find that writing lyrics first, my songs that I write lyrics first aren't necessarily as musically interesting as I would like them to be.
Okay, you know what
I
mean?
Because then I keep the lyrics really, I keep the music pretty simple. Just let the lyric drive the thing, so.
And all these challenges are about forcing you to do things you don't normally do and to stretch, and this definitely did it for me.
Awesome. Yeah, I'm really glad. Yeah, congratulations, it's great.
Yeah, good fun.
Yeah, and I think for everybody on this challenge, I feel like it must have stretched people in different ways. Even for me, I'm very well experienced in on time signature music. I even stretched in different ways than I ever have before on this one. You know,
you were going crazy with the time signatures. Time signatures.
Yeah. I was going nuts, but I was trying to let go of structure a little bit.
Yeah,
and I think I did that, and I think I've been doing that.
Yeah,
more lately.
Yeah, no, it's really fun.
All right, I am here in the band. I think that's all the time we have on Song Talk Radio. Special thanks to you, Phil, for pulling off the challenge. Good job.
Thank you, Neil.
And special thanks to both of us for hosting this challenge and doing it.
That's true. But we've got some more listener challenges coming up.
Yes, we do. You do have at least one more episode of listener songs that are queued up. So if you didn't hear yours in last week's episode, be sure to tune in for next week's episode. We'll be featuring those songs and some of them are really good, actually. Oh,
we have one that's just like, what the hell?
Yeah, it's just great. Okay, we want to hear from you too, so please send your comments on Facebook or Instagram to @songtalkradio, or send us an email, feedback@songtalk.ca, and be sure to check out our YouTube channel for live performance videos and full episodes, and subscribe today to the Song Talk Radio podcast on your favorite podcast provider. And please support us at our Patreon page. You can visit songtalk.ca/support. Thank you to everyone who's supported us so far. You can find links to all the products, books, and web services we mentioned on Song Talk Radio on our resources page on the website. And please join us at our next monthly Song Talk meetup. If you're in Toronto for our in-person meetups or anywhere in the world for our online meetups, it's free to join on Eventbrite and free to attend the meetups. Bring a song and a lyric sheet and get constructive feedback from other songwriters. Stop by songtalk.ca for the link. You can follow me at neilmodi.com. You can follow Phil.
PhilEmery.ca.
And be sure to stop by the website, songtalk.ca, to browse past shows and find out how you can be a guest. Thanks for tuning in, and keep on writing.
Rock and roll, everyone.